Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Give me one shot here on a blue chip stock. Believe me, Kevin, the only problem you're gonna have is that you didn't buy more. Nobody knows if the stock is gonna go up, down, sideways, or in circles.
What's going on, NBA draft fans? Your boys are back. The Wolves of Ball Street. Your favorite draft analysts. Favorite draft analysts. The Draft Act. NBA Draft Show. My name is Corey Sullivan, and I am here, as always, with my co-host, Albert Garbage Time Gimp. Albert, what's cracking, dude?
What's going on? Happy holidays. It's Christmas week. Yes, it Didn't even realize. Yeah, it's Christmas week, so it's good to be on. I'm excited to be on, excited to talk some hoops, excited to talk some Duke basketball. All is well, and happy holidays.
Yes, Duke basketball, the gift that keeps on giving. I'm excited for this episode. I think it's going to be an interesting episode. Maybe it gets a little spicy. Who knows? There's no way of knowing. But we are covering Duke's Kyle Filipowski. Who would have thought the first Duke prospect we cover in season was going to be Kyle Filipowski? We did cover his teammate, Derek Lively, in a preseason episode. Mr. Filipowski is a forward. He is 19.6 years old on draft night. He is listed at 6'11 or 7 feet, depending where you look. 220 pounds, did not find a wingspan. He is playing 27.3 minutes per game, averaging 14.8 points per game, 9.2 rebounds per game, 1.3 assists per game to 2.2 turnovers, 1.5 steals a game, 0.8 blocks. Shooting. 43.2%, 33.3% from three, and 81.5% from the free throw line. True shooting percentage of 54.1 with a PER of 26.3. Preseason stock prices for Filipowski. ESPN had him at 31. SB Nation did not have him ranked. Basketball News had him at 24. The Athletic did not have him ranked. Tankathon had him at 29. No ceilings. We had him at 44. Sports Illustrated did not have him ranked. That was an average stock price of 37.6. Coming in at 37th on the Draft Act IPO. Currently, though, ESPN has him at 14. The Athletic still did not have him ranked in their last update. Tankathon has him at 16. Basketball News has him at 18. Bleacher Report has him at 18. Sports Illustrated has him at 17. No Ceilings has him at 21 on the big board that we just released on the website this week. That is an average stock price of 21.3. So, Albert, I ask you, as always, is Kyle Filipowski's stock price too high, too low, or is it just right?
I think anywhere in the 20s is totally fair. I think where I'm at so far with Filipowski is he is a player who we will talk about.
He is a player. That is good evaluation.
He is a player with some areas of improvement. And he's not the perfect player. There are certain things about his game that I don't necessarily love. So at this stage, with what we've seen so far, which has been pretty pleasant at times, I would say 21 is pretty fair.
I think it's fair right now, for sure. He's clearly been one of the biggest risers in this draft cycle so far. As you can see, people were skeptical of him for reasons that we'll discuss throughout the pod. But he's also been, you know, one of the guys who has been really solid this year. Things that he has to work on for sure, but he showed some stuff that I think preseason, based on some of the reports, which, you know, you can't put all of your stock and all your faith into, he has outplayed what people had him at. So I'm cool with 21.3. I think there's room for him to continue to climb depending on how this, you know, the rest of his season goes. But I think he's trending in the right direction that ultimately, you know, he's going to be a top 20 guy. And I think, you know, he could potentially be a lottery pick because I do think that, you know, as we're going to continue to go on and we get into conference play, you know, there are going to be some guys that I think that are ranked in the lottery now that ultimately might fall out and we're going to have surprises. And I think that Filipowski's a guy who's going to be steady and consistent. And I think that means something.
Yeah, I agree. And to be honest, Corey, there might be, you know, what you were describing about guys falling out of the lottery. There might be guys on his team who end up doing that as well. And I'm not saying that it will happen, but it's possible. So considering all that, I think I agree with you. I think he's been good. I think he's actually been good, and we'll talk more about that. But overall, there's clearly a shot for him to make the lottery.
Albert, you kind of read my mind a little bit. I mean, if I were to ask you, Kyle Filipowski is Duke's blank prospect.
Oh, God. That's a really tough one, dude. That's a really, really tough one. I think right now I want to say second. I know that Derek Whitehead has not looked great since coming back from injury, but as you mentioned, I think you mentioned this last week. I don't remember when you mentioned it, but it is possible that it might be an AJ Griffin type of thing where he needs time to reacclimate and kind of, you know, get into the flow of things, yada, yada, yada. So, yeah. And then Derek Lively is really difficult for me. I think he's only become more difficult for me since we recorded that preseason pod. So yeah. I feel pretty good about saying second.
I agree with you. I think right now he is the second best prospect, and part of being a draft prospect is projecting forward, right? So yes, Lively and Derek Whitehead have struggled, but there's still time. And, you know, by the time you're listening to this, I will have put out a piece on Lively, Derek Whitehead, and Dylan Mitchell in there as well. Guys who have kind of dropped their draft stock a little bit and just talking about, you know, potentially why their draft stock has dropped. And with Derek, you know, clearly the injury has affected him, but it is one of those things where, you know, he's got to start turning it on eventually. Or, you know, a guy like Filipowski, who maybe isn't the sexiest pick ever, but has brought some kind of level of consistency to a team. And what he could do in the NBA, it could surpass him. So I don't think it's out of the question that he becomes the best prospect. But right now, I would rank him behind Whitehead.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you, man.
All right. So as we move on from that, now I'm going to ask you if you had $10.
Okay, here we go.
To invest in Kyle Filipowski, Tyrese Proctor, and Derek Lively. Whoa. How would you spend your $10? I know normally I go with the three guys who play kind of similarly, but these are the guys on Duke after Derek that I think are the guys that are going to be in the draft conversation, because I think Mitchell stays a second year.
That's really interesting. Okay, let's do this then. I actually was not expecting that combo at all, or that trio at all. Let's do... Because, man, Lively is really difficult for me at this point. So let me be honest. Okay. I'm going to give Lively $2.
Okay. You got eight left.
And I'll give 4 and 4 to Filipowski and Proctor, because I do like Proctor a lot. Yeah.
Very interesting. That's the kind of zag that I was looking for with the Tyrese Proctor included in there. I'm going to give Filipowski 5. I'm going to give Lively 3. And I'm going to give Proctor 2, because as iffy as Lively has looked, to put it kindly, I don't think this Duke roster construction is doing him any favors. He also is a guy who was coming back from an injury. And I think that he's shown some real passing flashes. I think that when you put him in an NBA context, what he'll be able to do offensively is going to look way smoother than what he's doing at Duke. And I think that you know, if you look at some of the statistics, you know, the advanced stats, like, they're, you know, they tell a little bit of a different story as reasons to be optimistic, and And I think that, you know, he's looked fluid on the perimeter at times, and he could play drop, and I think he could switch a little bit. So even if the shot never comes around, and, you know, we'll cover Derek Lively in its entirety at some other point, I do think I'm not fully jumping off the wagon yet. Although, you know, like everybody else, he has slightly dropped on my own personal board, but not too far, because I was already a little skeptical about him coming into the year. But I still think there's intriguing stuff. All right, let's get into Kyle Filipowski here. And I think with him, we have to start with the shooting.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason to even ask the question. His thing is that he is 7 feet tall, and the man can shoot. So he's shooting 33% from three.
Right.
Is he a 33% three-point shooter?
No. No, not at all. It's to the point where, Corey, when I looked up those numbers, I was like, this can't be right. Because when I watch him shoot, it's not like it's pretty alarming when he misses for me. And Corey, I did want to ask you something, because as I was evaluating Filipowski through his first, what, how many games has he played? 11 games or so, 12 games. Like, I did wonder. I thought early on in the season he had some like wild misses, like really short side, whatever. Was wondering, is it more of him just adjusting to college basketball, was what I thought, because mechanically everything looked fantastic. I really like watching him shoot. Like, everything looks really pretty to me. So I was wondering what was going on and why he had such ugly misses early on in the season. And I thought to myself, well, it could very easily just be him adjusting to college basketball and college in general, or maybe I'm just being way too nice to him and cutting him way too much slack. Just wanted to get some feedback from you, because when I watched him shoot, I was like, this is beautiful. Yeah. And this should go in every single time. So I was wondering, okay, if they weren't going in as much early on, what was the reason for that? Is something I wanted to ask.
He might have the prettiest shot in the class, like just from a technical, like how you would want to teach somebody how to shoot a jump shot. That thing is beautiful, man. And he's doing it at 6'11", 7 feet with a high release. Like, it's a pretty technically sound, aesthetically pleasing jumper. I think, you know, if you look at early on, I think it could be a number of things, because it's certainly not the mechanics, right? It could be, like you said, maybe he's adjusting to the speed of the game, the length of closeout guys. I also think, and, you know, I briefly mentioned it with Lively, I don't think that this Duke team really has the kind of guards that know how to find a guy like him in his spots at all times. Jeremy Roach is a guy who, you know, he's looking for his shot, and it's an inefficient shot. He can kind of run a little pick and roll and a pick and pop, but he's not going to do it consistently. He's not passing you open. He's no Taron Armstrong. Shout out to Tyler Metcalf. I think that Tyrese Proctor, maybe by the end of the year, we start seeing a little bit more like impressive passing flashes from him, where, you know, it could benefit Lively and Filipowski and Whitehead. But we have to remember with Proctor is that while he's been on the radar and he's played high-level competition for a while, he is a year younger than everybody. He's a reclass. So he does still need time to develop too. And I think watching Filipowski, numerous times I was just like, oh man, he really missed a wide open shooter to take that step back shot. And even when it goes in, it's like, okay, the result is good, but the process wasn't. And it's one of those things where, you know, as a player, you're like, all right, I hit the shot. So if I get that opportunity again, I'm gonna take another one. And sometimes even though like passing is kind of his thing, I do think that sometimes he doesn't see everything, and that's hurt some of the guys on Duke. So I do think that it's like a combination of everything. And sometimes it's, what'd you say it was, 11, 12 games, right?
Yeah.
Small sample.
Right.
Small sample.
Right.
You know, over a 40 game season, I'd expect that number to be at 36.5%, 37% and climb up. And you look at like the back end of the season numbers, and he's probably going to be closer to 40% than what he is now. So I think it's all of the above.
Okay. Yep. I think that's all fair. And I'm going to agree with everything that you said. And on top of that, just like, not just like his standing and shooting is beautiful, but even like on the move,
yeah,
dribble handoffs. He did get pretty ambitious at times with a couple one dribble step back shots that were did not lead to much, but I like that he tried them, right? Like the effort and the attempt is always a good thing as well. But overall, man, I think if we just isolate his shooting alone, an NBA team will look at that jumper and think, wow, this guy's going to be an incredible shooter moving forward, because the mechanics, the way that it looks aesthetically, as you mentioned, the high release point, everything looks so beautiful. The way he gets it off is easy as well. So I think there's so much to like about his shooting, where it has to increase his stock in a lot of people's minds, because the NBA likes shooters. And if you've got one at 7 feet, it's not a bad thing to have. So that alone kind of sets a very strong foundation for him as a prospect. And then once the other aspects of his game start to develop as well, we're talking about a really good player. So just in terms of his shooting, Corey, I like it a lot. I love it is as far as I'll go.
Yeah, and I'm glad you touched kind of on the movement shooting. I wish that Duke used him
more
as a movement shooter. You know, I think he's got good instincts. Like, most guys who are his size, you know, even if they're picking and popping or whatever, like, you know, that's kind of it. They don't necessarily know when to like flatten out to the corner out of, you know, when they're spotted up and somebody else is running the pick and roll. He's got that in his game. He already has that kind of feel as to where, as either to lift or to flatten. And then, like you said, like he's knocked down shots like as the wing guy coming off of a THO. So if you go under, he'll let it fly, you know, and I think that those are the kind of opportunities that he's going to get in the NBA, where, you know, obviously teams will have a scout on him and they'll know. And I think college teams are smart. They know that he's a shooter, but you still want to see a guy that tall. You still want to see it before you're like selling out to stop him, especially when he's only knocking down 33% of his shots overall. You're not selling out for him coming off a DHO, especially, and we'll get to, you know, some of the other stuff with this game. He put it on the floor coming off that DHO and kind of attack a little bit. But I do like how versatile he's going to be as a shooter. And when you're a big man who could shoot, there's a big difference coming in and like what he represents as a shooter who's 7 feet tall versus what, you know, we were talking about, like, oh, Derek Lively took some threes in, you know, the EYBL that maybe he's going to be able to space the floor one day. Like, there's a vast difference in what you could do and in how you can use him in your offense because of how many different ways he can get to a shot.
Yeah, no, I agree. And something that you kind of mentioned before, he can handle the ball a little bit.
He can handle the ball a little bit.
Yeah. And the only gripe that I think I had was I thought he settled for mid-range jump shots too much instead of taking it all the way to the rim at times. But that can change. That can improve. You know, not gonna freaking, you know, kill the guy for it. But I didn't mind some of the mid-range shots he took as well. So
I like some of them.
Yeah, exactly. So having that in his bag is not a bad thing. Which also led me to my comp for him, because like I actually like some of the mid-range, mid-post stuff that he was doing. But Corey, I think the point that you made earlier is the most important point. I think Filipowski's evaluation, Derek Lively's evaluation, Proctor, all these guys, their evals are going to be so hard because of how they're currently being used in the system that they're playing in and with the players that they're playing with. It's going to be really difficult for us to see what type of player even Filipowski is going to be because of how he's being used currently at Duke. As you mentioned, the DHO stuff, like there was one possession that I looked at where he was the one getting the ball off the DHO. He pulled up like full speed, pulled up for a jump shot once he got it, and it was beautiful. And it went in, and it really made me think, like, wow, if I was the coach and I saw a 7-footer do that, I'd think about doing that a little bit more. But the unfortunate thing is they haven't done much more of that. So I think that's unfortunate, and is a really good point that you made. And I really agree with, and I really hope that they do more of that, but I just don't see it happening.
Yeah. And especially like, I think that if you deployed Filipowski in more of these kind of scenarios and more movement scenarios, and then you did the same thing with Derek. And instead of like telling Derek to be a guy who's consistently taking tough shots, you were like, I want you to like get open and run off floppy and through elevator screen and right. do all these different things. I think the threat of those two guys like on opposite ends of the floor could really open things up for, you know, some of their other guys who maybe are a little bit more reliant on like, you know, getting into the paint. So, but you touched on the mid-range shot, and I think he does settle sometimes. Like he's had moments where, because I think he can create in isolation a little bit, and he doesn't do it. He doesn't get the opportunity to do it a ton, but he has flashed it a little bit in his bag. And sometimes he'll kind of settle and pull up in that mid-range, and when it goes in, it looks great. But where I really like him to be used there is in the mid post. That's where I really like it. I think he already is huge. He's already got a high release. And when you give him that ball on one of the blocks and he could spin off over whatever shoulder the team is overplaying him, and he can just knock down that kind of an unguarded shot, it could be a real weapon. Now, he's not like a great passer. You know, I don't think he's like a terror mm-hmm. or anything as a decision maker. And I don't think he's been a decision making hub. I think he's a play finishing type correct. More so than any kind of creator. So I'm not saying that like you dump the ball to him in the mid post and run your offense there, or, you know, let him initiate stuff from the elbow all the time. But I think that, you know, he is a threat as a scorer. And, you know, as he grows, he'll learn how to like, you know, read double teams or whatever and kick to his open teammates. And that comes with experience. But I do think the fact that one, he can, you know, kind of just shoot over you in the mid post. Mm-hmm. And two, he can, he has shown ability to score around the basket in the post. Mm-hmm. He definitely needs to get stronger there.
Yes.
He needs to get stronger. Cause I mean, overall, you know, he's shooting 43% from the floor, mm-hmm. right? Like, so he's got to get stronger. And part of that is finishing around the hoop, because he gets to the spots around there and he's got some craft. And I think he's got a pretty good second jump, like mm-hmm. in the offensive rebounds, kind of, you know, put it back and whatnot. But if he's going to be used as a guy who is on that mid post, sometimes he's going to have to back guys down when he gets, you know, more than just like a guard on him. Cause I think when he gets a guard, he's, you know, he's pretty efficient. But when he has a guy who's maybe a wing or something, and I think that's what he's going to experience at the NBA level, he's going to have to learn how to punish those kind of mismatches. So that'll come with, you know, strength, I think.
No, I 100% agree. That was actually one of the things that I wrote in my notes, because I felt that way for the defensive end as well. I think he needs to get a little bit stronger. I think he's got a decent frame, good size, whatever. But I think for both ends, offensively and defensively, adding strength will be really good for him. Because, Corey, it's something that I did want to say. You mentioned his passing. I actually thought he was a pretty good passer. I'm not going to say he was a great passer or special or anything like that, but there are a couple of possessions where I was like, oh, like that's a really smart extra pass that you made there. And I think really speaks to him being a cerebral player. He's a smart guy. He plays smart.
High feel. He's got a high feel.
He's got a high feel that I enjoyed a lot. I think the mid-post stuff that you said, I really agree with. There was one possession, caught it on the left block, posted up, took one dribble to the middle, and then he spun back, took a shot from the baseline. It was beautiful. Went in, looked really good, and really made me think like, wow, if that's an aspect of his game that he can continue to develop, then that adds a really nice wrinkle to him where, I mean, obviously he's not a great passer, but if he can be a good passer and have that type of bag from the mid post, you know, down to the low post, wherever, then we're talking about a guy who is a multi-level scorer and a guy that you can actually throw the ball to and say, hey, you go and get us a bucket, which is highly valued in the NBA. And especially if we were talking about a 7-footer with his shooting touch, that's really, really special. So I agree with you, man. I think the biggest thing with him, for me, with just following up on what you said, I just wish he was a little bit stronger. But the great thing about strength is you can always add strength. And we've been talking about that, right? Easy to add old man strength, easy for you to go into the gym and lift some weights and you will get stronger. So that's something that doesn't need to be taught. He can go and earn that himself. But the offensive wrinkles to his game is, I think, the most enticing thing with him, because we already know he's got the shooting form to go with all that.
Yeah. And shout out to everybody watching live on YouTube. Shout out to Lawrence Goggins, who says, Lauri Markkanen vibes. Larry, you're getting ahead of ourselves. You know, you got to wait to the end of the show till we get to our comps. But I will agree. You know, spoiler alert, I wrote about Kyle Filipowski and his offensive game for NoCeilingsNBA.com a couple of weeks ago, and kind of broke down parts of why I think he showed so many similarities to Laurie. And, you know, and for me, it was an exercise to help better understand what Kyle Filipowski could be at the NBA level. And part of that, part of the things that I saw, like going back, you know, moving past the shooting, moving past like why he needs to add strength, touch around the basket, I think he can put the ball on the floor. And he's not a guy that who is going to, you're going to give the ball on the perimeter and be like, go create and penetrate, right? Like off the bounds here. But when he comes off those handoff actions, like he has the ability to get into the paint as the defense is shifted and he's got a little bit of momentum. He has the ability to attack closeouts. And when you have the kind of shooting gravity that he has, even only shooting 33%, guys run out at him. They are trying to run him off the line. And, you know, he's had moments, especially on the baseline. That's where I really like him, when he's in the corner and a guy closes out, there's a swing pass to him or a skip or whatever, that he can throw a little pump fake, and then it's like one or two dribbles at the rim and he's finishing. Like, yeah, that's going to be really valuable. Like, obviously you don't want him putting the ball on the floor a million times, because I do think he's got a tight handle, but he's not like shifty, so he's not going to create like a ton of space. And he doesn't really need to, because he's so big, but he's just not that type of guy right now. But I like how he is going to be able to attack gaps and seams and closeouts with a couple of dribbles finishing near the rim. Now, I do also think that, you know, he's going, that part of that added strength will help him finish when he is getting downhill. But he's got some nifty footwork. He's got some nifty footwork. You know, he's got that left right step through, mm-hmm. The finish Euro, I guess I saw somebody call it after I wrote my piece. So I think he's got a way more versatile scoring package than I think I thought we were going to see this year at Duke.
Court, I think the point that you're ultimately making is that we're not going to expect him to play like a wing, but he is a big that has some wing skills.
Which I don't know. Like, I actually think he might be used more as a wing at the next level.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's going to be part of his versatility. Like, I think that he's really interesting because, you know, we see some of the guys in Utah who obviously, like, Lauri Markkanen's a big, Kelly Olynyk is a big, but both of those guys are playing in a five-out system. And really, a lot of these positions are interchangeable from the wing spot. He's also a guy that, you know, you could put with another post guy, and he can be out on the perimeter and be used more like a wing. I you know, and I think that that's ultimately going to be what he has to be, because, you know, we'll talk about his defense later, but I just think from a value standpoint, like, I don't think he's shown the rim protection instincts to ultimately be like your full-time five necessarily, unless you have like a special defender at the four who's equally versatile on that end as Filipowski is on the offensive end. But I do think he's got some real kind of wingy skills, which could create some offensive mismatches. With that said, it wouldn't totally shock me if a coach who maybe wasn't as creative as some of the coaches are in the NBA, you know, does kind of pigeonhole him into like that floor spacing stretch 4-5 role and doesn't kind of use him, I think, as optimally as you kind of could use him. And again, we only see it in flashes at Duke, because I also don't think he's being used optimally in Duke's system. So it's very clear that that could happen in the NBA as well.
No, 100%. I think that ultimately what you said was the point that I was trying to make, where it's he's got a lot of wing skills, and it's surprising and alarming and impressive to see that from a 7-footer. But once again, whether it's in college or the NBA, that system that he ends up in, how he's utilized, the sets that they run with this guy is going to be really important. Because, Corey, going back to the point that you made earlier, he is a finishing type of guy, right? And if you're going to be a play finisher, then how you finish the play, a lot of that is dependent on the type of stuff that you're running as a team, right? Or that the coach is running. So I'm with you, man. I think that's what makes him so intriguing is the wing skill stuff, the stuff that he can do with the ball in his hands. But at the same time, maybe, you know, you don't want to get too wild and have him be the ultimate, you know, I don't think he's going to be the type of guy that's the offensive hub for anybody. I think you're saying the same thing.
So, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. So with that being said, situation is going to be really, really important. And how these wing type skills are utilized is going to be really interesting to see.
I agree. Is there anything else offensively that you want to touch on for Filipowski?
Actually, no, I think I covered everything.
All right. Then I think it's time that we take a quick break. And when we return, we will cover Kyle Filipowski's defense and get into some of our America's favorite segments. All right. What's going on, everyone? We're back to break down the other side of the ball for Kyle Filipowski. So, Albert, I'm going to let you kick it off. Where are you at with Filipowski on the defensive side of the ball?
I've got some question marks.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's hear them.
I like his competitive spirit, is what I put. I think he competes. I do not think that even with his competitive spirit, he will ever be an elite level defender. And I don't think that's a crazy thing to say.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. I think it's very fair. Some of the things that I have about him is I think his feet are pretty heavy. I won't go as far as saying that he's got stone feet because we've seen some guys in the league with some stone feet. I don't think he has that, but his feet are a little bit heavy. I think guarding smaller, quicker guys is going to be difficult for him. But hey, that's difficult for all 7-footers. So that's not a Filipowski exclusive thing. I did want to say, though, that I was pleasantly surprised by his positioning on defense at times. I thought he was pretty good about being in the right spots and being there, being at those spots in a timely manner. So I did want to give him some credit for that. There were a couple blocks that I was like, oh, I didn't think you were going to get there, but he did. So I think that speaks more towards, you know, the effort and the desire to get there because he got there, you know. But just overall, I do feel like number one, and I said this previously on offense too, but I'd like for him to be stronger. I think adding strength will help him on the defensive side of the ball because where he lacks with foot speed, I think, you know, he does have decent size and length. I haven't seen any measurables on his wingspan, but his arms don't look like he has like a negative wingspan. So if he can get a little bit stronger, I think that'll help him compensate a little bit for the lack of foot speed. And overall positioning stuff was good too. So actually, yeah, I don't think he's a bad or terrible defender. I just don't feel like he has the tools to ever be like an elite defender. But I think intellectually, feel-wise, and with his size, I think he has more than enough to at least be decent if he just, you know, tightens things up.
Yeah, I'm kind of optimistic about him as a defender. Not as a rim protector, not as a guy who's going to anchor your defense. And this goes back to more of him, you know, potentially being like a wing type of guy. But I thought that he had some really impressive moments in that Kansas game against Jalen Wilson, who I thought he did a good job staying with him out on the perimeter. And it was weird is like from a body perspective, he looks like he's got those tight hips.
Yes.
Like that slender frame where, you know, you would think like he's a little stiff and he's got a little stiffness to him, but he's a little bit more flexible than he looks. And so I do think he's capable at sliding his feet. I don't think he's going to be one of these multi-tooled, like switchable defenders. Like I don't want him switching on to guards all that often, which I'm sure there are going to be NBA teams who try to target him, you know, looking forward and trying to picture him in a playoff setting. But I do think that, you know, he does have the lateral mobility to at least move his feet with some of the wingier guys in, you know, at least at the college level. And, you know, we'll see potentially in the NBA, but I think he competes. I think he moves his feet kind of well. He's tall and, you know, that's even if he's not super long, like he's still long for human beings. You know, just because he's not right. Victor, like he's still a giant person who's going to reach up and you have to shoot over. So I think that structurally, he's going to be a guy who can defend within a system. And if he can get that far, he could be a guy who could be valuable to a team and not absolutely murder you. Now, do I expect that early in his career? No, I think he's going to murder teams early in his career with his defense. I think teams will pick on him a little bit. But ultimately, I do think that he has it in him to overcome, you know, whatever shortcomings you would think he has based on how he looks on the court.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you talked about his flexibility. I thought to myself, well, maybe he's a quiet Pilates guy that we don't know about.
Well,
you know?
Maybe keep doing it because he needs to be more flexible.
Yeah, for sure. I think overall it's weird. I think I was expecting both of us to be a little bit lower on him defensively, but after watching the tape, I didn't feel that way because the effort is there. Right. And the stuff that you talked about, right? Where, yeah, he looks stiff and he looks like, you know, he's going to get abused defensively, but he has his moments and he has moments where he steps up and he moves his feet, he slides his feet, and he really fights to stay in front of guys, you know. And guarding someone like Jalen Wilson isn't going to be easy for a 7-footer necessarily, you know. Like,
no,
he's still a wing, you know, that you've got to compensate for speed and handle and all those things. So, I don't hate him as a defender, but I also agree with you. I think early on, it will be difficult. But at the same time, Corey, sometimes for these younger guys, you got to go through those seasons of getting picked on and, you know, exposed for you to grow and become better at defending. And I think he has the skills to, like I said before, potentially one day become at least a decent defender. I'm not saying he will be, but I don't see why not.
The path is there. The path is there. And, you know, we have to realize, like, most forwards and most power forwards or centers are like, you know, you'll live with hit the matchup there defensively, right? In college basketball, in the NBA, like if you're running him out of five, he might have to, you know, deal with Jalen Duren or, you know, Embiid or Jokic or like a really strong guy who's going to bully him a little bit.
Right.
He might have to chase, you know, Karl Anthony Towns out on the perimeter as a shooter. He might have to chase Paul George out on the perimeter. Those are much different problems than what he's currently facing at Duke. But I think we're going to get a clearer picture when, you know, now we get into conference play and he's consistently playing, you know, these high level guys in a good conference. We'll see more on that end. But I think, you know, scenarios like the Kansas game give you reason to be optimistic, even if you should never expect him to be any kind of lockdown guy. But you should expect that, okay, we're drafting this guy with a top 20 pick, potentially a late lottery pick, probably. Is he going to bring enough offensively that we could live with, you know, him as a system defender? I think that's the conversation defensively. I kind of think, yeah, I think I'm a buyer. I think when I did my piece on him, it gave me a clear picture of how he could contribute at the NBA level. And I ultimately ended up a little bit higher on him. I don't remember. I have him at like 15 or something. I don't know if I was the high man on him because Nathan already deleted all of our individual rankings when he put together the composite rankings. So yeah, I think I've bought in based on, you know, our early season deep dive. There's still a lot of time for me to move him, you know, up or down the board, but where I'm at right now, I feel confident that he's one of the safer picks in the draft.
Yeah. And to be honest, Corey, after doing the film deep dive and everything, I think I'm going to end up higher on him too than where I had him. Actually, I think I had him 30th. And after going deeper and, you know, really getting a good feel for him, I definitely feel like I have him a lot higher than 30th now. I don't think I'm as high as you at putting him at 15, but, you know, at the same time, who knows? Things can change and I may end up having him even higher than that. You never know how things go. But so far, it just on the defensive side of the ball, was pleasantly surprised is the best way I think to characterize how I felt.
And, you know, kind of the last thing about the defense is, you know,
the rebounding.
The last thing, you know, the last part of defense is securing that rebound. And let me tell you, as a high school basketball coach, coaching a young varsity team, you really need to secure those rebounds. And he's been a really, really good rebounder. Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, when you're making comparisons to some of those other, you know, white shooters, I think he's been better than some of those guys on a rebounding front. I think he really reads the ball well coming off the rim. especially offensively. I think he's had some really good crashes,
yes,
for offensive rebounds. But defensively, I think he's a strong defensive rebounder, and I think it's one of the, you know, better parts of his game. So, yeah, I think that's an important aspect to what he could bring as well.
No, I agree, and I'm sure once we get into the comps, we're going to bring up names like Kelly Olynyk or Lauri Markkanen or whatever. And I agree with you. I think he's a better rebounder than those guys at this stage. So that's another plus for him.
Yeah. All right. I think, is there anything else defensively you want to hit with him, or, you know, is it time?
No, I think it's time.
All right. If you're buying stock in Kyle Filipowski, then who may you have bought stock in previously?
So, Corey, I really wanted to avoid the white guy for white guy comp. And yeah. I tried really hard, thought of all kinds of names, went to the regulars, blah, blah, blah. But this is a guy that I know I've mentioned before. I don't think I've ever like exactly said that any of our prospects reminded me of him. But this is a weird comp for me because he was much shorter than Filipowski. I think he was like 6'7", 6'8". I think 6'8 is actually his height. But I imagined if he was 7 feet tall in the current NBA, you would use Glenn Rice in a similar fashion. And the reason why I brought up Glenn Rice...
Wild card! Let's go!
The reason why I brought up Glenn Rice is because I, you know, Glenn Rice always kind of struggled with his knees, and he always had gigantic things all over his knees. But
he did.
I loved how he operated in the mid-range. And obviously, that was like a 90s staple, of course. But the way that, you know, he was running off screens, like, I distinctly remember the way that Glenn Rice played on those Hornets teams. They had Anthony Davis. Anthony Mason was initiating a lot of their offense. They had David Wesley on that team, Vlade Divac. I know I'm missing some other guys too. But anyway, the way that they, Bobby Jones, but the way that they operated things, and they had Glenn Rice going off of screens, and they had, you know, David Wesley and all these guys running off of screens together, I thought was really interesting. And there'd be times that they would just dump the ball off to Glenn Rice in the low post, and he would go to work and go middle, shoot over his left shoulder, a little baby hook or a little jump shot. I think there's a world where Filipowski might be used in that way, but he's 7 feet tall. Mm-hmm. So I went with Glenn Rice because Glenn Rice was one of the sweetest shooters the league has ever seen. A guy who once averaged, I think, 28 or 26 points per game, was a multi-time All-Star, was such a good player, one of my favorites growing up. And it actually really broke my heart when he came over to the Knicks and was terrible because he was so washed at that point and his knees were out. But a guy that was really good in his time and was an unbelievable shooter and was used really well on a lot of different teams. And so I went with Glenn Rice.
I'm glad that you were able to avoid the white on white comp, because as hard as I tried, I just couldn't figure it out. And you had to really go outside of the box to come up with one of those that wasn't. Look, I wrote an entire piece on the comparisons between him and Lauri Markkanen. And for me, with Lauri, it came down to, I think that they move really similarly on the court. Like, when I watched him move around, kinesthetically, the movement patterns just, some of the times it was, you know, it's almost identical. I think that if you're a guy like Filipowski, who's watching the NBA growing up as a kid, you're probably watching a little bit of Lauri Markkanen as a guy. You like you look at him and you go, oh, I look like that. And you probably think, all right, I'm going to take, you know, some things from his game. So I think that if you go and read my piece, you can really see kind of the in-depth reasons as to why I think that. But it's the pick and pop. It's the attacking closeouts. It's the kind of sneaky ball handling ability that they have together. It's the ability to kind of punish mismatches in the mid post. It's kind of like the sneaky, like defensive ability to move your feet and not get killed, which allowed Markkanen to kind of play small forward for the Cavs a little bit. Even if it wasn't ideal, you know, he did play small forward for the Cavs, which worked because of Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, but he was able to make that work, right? They didn't push him to the bench because he was passable. So go and read that piece in its entirety, and you'll see very specific examples on film. but that's the one I have to come to. And I think if you're really buying into him as a lottery guy, you're looking at how Lauri Markkanen has been used this year and in Utah, and you think, all right, if we can optimize this dude on an NBA floor,
right,
he might not be 22 points like Markkanen is right now, but maybe he's a guy who's averaging 16, 17 points per game, 10 rebounds, and, you know, isn't totally killing you on defense. And if you get that at the back end of the lottery, it's probably a pretty solid selection. You know, I don't think there's a Giannis that you're going to pass on in this draft necessarily after the lottery, but that's something we learn, obviously, every few years. You know, we don't know who's going to be the late guys, but I think he could, you know, bring that kind of production. I really do. So that's my comp, and I'm sticking to it.
No, it's a really, really good one. And honestly, I would have said the same if I wasn't really stubborn about not doing a white guy comp. So I really had to go above and beyond to land on Glenn Rice. But I love the comp, man.
I love that you brought that outside of the box thinking because nobody listening to this probably was going to be like, Albert's going to say Glenn Rice.
I mean,
I was thinking I was thinking maybe coming into this show, it's like maybe Albert's going to say like Detlef Schrempf. Oh, you know, maybe that's again. Who he was going to bring into this or something.
It's just, yeah. I mean,
Parks and Rec legend.
Yeah. I imagine, Corey, we probably have some kids listening who are like, who the hell is Glenn Rice? And that's okay too, kids.
Yeah. We need Fabulous to bring back the throwback jerseys to get some of these guys, you know, the shine that they deserve. All right, Albert, it's time for you to sell me this pen on Duke's Kyle Filipowski.
I don't know why, Corey, when you brought up the Fabulous jerseys things, I randomly thought of Bobby Jackson and then like Chris Webber. Weird. Okay. Let me sell you on this pen. Okay, guys, if you like shooters, and most NBA teams do, then you should be interested in Kyle Filipowski. Kyle Filipowski is a 7-foot dead eye sniper, a guy who is only going to get better at shooting if that's even possible. But yeah, I mean, don't ignore his numbers for now. We're 12 games into the season. He's shooting 33% from three, but that number can end up a lot higher by the time the season is over. I would also say if you're an NBA team, don't look at how Filipowski is being used at Duke right now. Look internally, look at how you run your offense and ask yourself, how can we be more creative about using a guy like that? Because as Corey and I have mentioned here, he is a 7-footer who has some wing skills, a guy who can dribble, pass, and shoot, and is a really interesting prospect who has also a little fire in his belly. He's a very competitive guy, a guy who's going to compete on both ends of the floor. So where he may lack in terms of athletic ability, he makes up for in skill and desire. And I could tell you this, a lot of NBA teams have bet on athleticism and have come up short, but betting on skill and desire is usually a pretty good bet to make. So that's why I'd say Kyle Filipowski might be a really good guy to bet on.
There's some bars at the end there.
I try.
I think that's the that's the you know, the quote that Paige uses for the graphic for the episode.
Turn the TikTok camera on, Kyle.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Albert, tell the people where they can find you, what you're working on, all the good stuff.
Sure. You can find me at Alberto Gim is where you can find me on Twitter. Where Twitter is going from here, we do not know.
There's no way of knowing.
We have no clue. But for as long as Twitter is alive, that's where you can find me. I'm currently working on a piece on Jalen Clark from UCLA. I will be dropping that piece on Thursday. So actually, by the time you're listening to this, it's probably out there. And I'm comparing him to an NFL legend is who I'm comparing him to this week. Yeah, it's going to be a weird one. I hope people don't hate it. But you know me, I always like to compare these prospects to somebody or something. So we're keeping that alive this week. And I'm comparing him to an NFL legend is where you can find me, if that makes any sense at all.
I absolutely love it. I think there's a lot of football player in how he plays defense. Nathan and I just saw UCLA and Kentucky this past weekend at the Garden, which was an awesome experience. Getting to, you know, be credentialed at Madison Square Garden for the first time was a little bit surreal, you know, as somebody who grew up coming to that arena.
Amazing.
And Jalen Clark was really impressive. He was really impressive live, you know, and you know, every time I watch him, I'm like, that dude looks like Javonte Green on the court. Let's like, go. Like there is a role for that dude in the NBA. I think he's probably going to end up being a first rounder. His impact is felt. It's felt.
I freaking love that. And he's someone, you know, I've been trying to hint at for a little bit now. I saw him live a couple of times at UCLA. And even for me, like I didn't. Yeah, he was just so impressive every single time. And every single time I'm there to watch Mari Bailey and Jaime Jaquez Jr. or Maxwell Lewis from Pepper. I'm always there to watch other people.
Yeah,
and I always end up exactly. I always end up leaving impressed by him. So, yeah.
Yeah, I told Nathan, I was like, dude, like he plays defense like a cornerback. Like, so, you know, I'm excited to read your piece on him. If you're listening to this, then my piece dropped yesterday on called Drop Coverage, you know, talking about a few guys who I mentioned earlier that have dropped in our hearts a little bit since the start of this draft cycle and why they're dropping. If there is a way to remedy the situation and what that means, you know, for their future. So check that out. We also released a mock draft, a big board, just a bunch of lists and rankings this week at NoCeilingsNBA.com. And you can read all of this awesome work for free. And if you subscribe, again, for free, what a Christmas gift, you will get it delivered directly to your email inbox every single morning for the rest of eternity is how long that'll be. So, rate, review, comment, share, like all the podcast stuff. That would really, you know, helps us grow and do more cool stuff. And we're going to be all over the place, live scouting. If you ever see any of us, come say hi. Come say what's up. We love and thank you all for your support. We hope you have a very happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. All that stuff. Enjoy spending time with all of your loved ones. Until next week, we're out. Peace.
Peace.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.